Anybody tell me? For the benefit of those who are here, we can review. For the benefit of those who are not here, we can let you know what we're talking about. Yes?
We would take the files from our past and look to the future. The future becomes the same as our past, nothing changes.
Yes. Our lives remain the same. Which is okay if the past is good, or if it's the way you want it. There's nothing wrong if it's the way you want it. It's wrong if it's not the way you want it. Can you explain what that means?
Yes, it's something, it's like not congruent, what you want and what's going on. That doesn't match, you don't want to take responsibility for it also. And then the brain will start thinking, that's the portion, it's not called the portion.
What else? Well, he said you have to take responsibility for what you want to create. Otherwise, you just pray. Now, this is an important point. I should write a book, What's Wrong with the Hare Krishnas? 108 things that are wrong. One of the things that's wrong is we pray, but we don't act. Hare Krishna, help me become healthy. And then we eat fried food, sugar, white flour, pizza, ice cream, and then we're... Yes? Can you relate to that? I find this very prominent amongst more of the ritualistic type Hindus. They say, you know, pray I do well, pray I get the job, pray for the health of this person. And I always say, just study. If you want to do well on your test, just study. But it's like, don't not study and pray that you'll do well. And sometimes we do that. You agree?
Yeah.
You've seen that? Like, so there was one great Christian saying, he said, you have to pray like everything depends on God, but you have to act like everything depends on you. So sometimes we say, you know, I've been praying to Krishna and he's not fulfilling my desire, but you're acting in a contradictory way to the way you're praying, and then you're blaming it on Krishna when it's actually your fault. But actually the prayer should be, Krishna, give me the strength, give me the intelligence to make this happen, rather than Krishna, make it happen and wake me up when it happens. Something like that. And that's why Prabhupada, you know, said that Krishna wanted Arjuna to fight, even though Krishna said, I've already killed them. So, but I want you to do it. So Krishna uses this. I've found this a very important realization in my life, that so many things were not happening and I was praying, but I wasn't aligned and they weren't happening. And when I became aligned internally with what I wanted to achieve externally, then it started happening. And it didn't happen before. Or it happened very little. I could see Krishna helping, but the help he was giving was more in proportion to what I was endeavoring to achieve. I'll give you an example. I think this is a really good example. And I think this example will also help you realize that a lot of times Krishna is telling us how to improve and we're not listening. So some years ago, maybe 8 or 9 years ago, I decided that I wanted to teach workshops both to devotees and non-devotees. And I developed a course on forgiveness because I felt that that course would have a broad appeal, both good for devotees and a way to introduce Krishna consciousness to non-devotees in a light way. And so I read a lot on forgiveness. I developed a workshop. I thought the workshop was quite good. And I went to a temple to teach it. Maybe it was only the third time I taught it. Now I probably taught it 50 times, but not the third time. And so I was thinking, all right, you know, 50, 100 devotees will show up. And 18 showed up. At least I got the message the day the workshop was going to begin. There were only 18. And that was about 11 o'clock, so it was going to start in the evening. And I had an argument with Krishna. Do you ever have arguments with Krishna?
Yes.
I said, look at it. I've prepared, I've studied, I've taught this. This is really good. It's really important. Why only 18 devotees? I was mad. Because I really wanted to make this a career where I could become well known as a teacher, support myself, and influence thousands of people. That was my plan. So I said, Krishna, after all this, why only 18 devotees? And I think as Panchajangri was saying, or Janani Vasa on our program, he was saying, sometimes Krishna speaks to you, but it's not in words per se. But you hear a message, right? So I heard a message, and Krishna said, as good as you are, I will send that many people. When you become better, I'll send more. Which was the perfect answer. Because I thought I was pretty good, and Krishna was saying, you're good enough for 18 people. Right? And they were all devotees, not even non-devotees. You're not even good enough for the non-devotees, and not good enough for more than 20. And then eventually, I built it up, and then the biggest workshop I got was 340. So I was like, yeah, I'm the man. No, but that was many years later. So then Krishna was saying, okay, when you're ready, I'll send the people. And then I got puffed up, and the next workshop was 10 people. Because I thought, you know, I had made it to the big leagues, and the next workshop just humbled me. Anyway, you understand what I mean? So we're praying, Krishna, please help me. But really what we're saying is, Krishna, just do it for me, because internally I'm afraid. I have beliefs which are not in alignment with what I want to achieve. I have doubts. I don't have self-confidence. All the things that we need to achieve what we want, we don't have, and we think by praying, Krishna will just do everything and we don't have to change. But that's a mistake. You understand? There's a really nice Christian prayer which I love, and it said, don't pray to God for tasks equal to your strength, but pray for strength equal to the task. You understand? So that illustrates an additional point, but the same point. When you're praying, you want to pray for the strength. You want to pray for the right consciousness. You want to pray for the attitude, for the belief, for the fearlessness, whatever it is that you need to accomplish what it is you want to accomplish. Does that make sense? Rather than just praying for the result, please Krishna, help me do this. Yes?
I'm wondering about praying for friends, this,
because
I don't like to pray for this kind of things.
What kind of things?
Like, give me strength to achieve this and this.
Or why?
I feel uncomfortable to ask Krishna to give me things for material, especially for material.
No, we're not talking about material. We're talking about for service. Give me strength so I can do the service. Give me the right attitude so I can achieve. Yeah, we shouldn't pray. I mean, you can pray for material if that helps your service. That's okay. Yeah. I pray for $10,000 a month because I have a company and I need to support a large number of devotees, and that's about how much I need. So is it wrong to pray, Krishna, help me figure out how to do this, give me the opportunity, because I need these devotees. And once we have these devotees employed, then our preaching is going to explode. So, but if I pray for the money just for my sense gratification, that would be wrong. Of course. Right? Yesterday we gave an example of a person who needs money, who wants money, and has no money. And we said, the person says, money's not important. And I said, anyone who says something is not important doesn't have it. Because it's a contradiction, because you wouldn't work for something that's not important. Sometimes, in our Hare Krishna movement, another, 108 crazy things devotees do? Here's another thing wrong. Not with all of us, but some of us. We think, especially this is a male, this is how many men think. They think that marriage is really not meant to be good, and it's really not even that important. It's just, you know, how come you got married? Well, I couldn't last, so I got married. That's one paradigm, right? Then after I'm married, well, your marriage isn't going well. Well, that's good, because I'll be detached. You know, having a good relationship, it's not important. Actually, it's dangerous. Right? And another craziness is the idea that my success in marriage has no correlation or relationship to my success in Krishna consciousness. Now, obviously, you know some people who think like this? Have you met any of them? Yeah, there's a lot of them out there who think like this, unfortunately. Especially my generation, we thought like that more when we were younger. But the point is, if you think like that, will you have a good relationship? No, you can't. Because you don't value it. Right? But then you may realize at some point your relationship is bad and you're praying to Krishna, help make my relationship good. At the same time, you don't really value it. You don't understand it. And so you're conflicted. You can't achieve what you're trying to achieve because internally you don't have the right mentality. And then you sit there and pray to Krishna to make it work and you have the wrong mentality. When you should be praying, Krishna, give me the right mentality. Does that make sense? Yeah. So yesterday we said that how you're thinking will show up externally. And so you know how you're thinking, just look at what's happening. And what we normally do when things are happening, but they're not happening the way we want them to happen, what do we normally do? We find someone to blame. Yes? Now there's something I didn't tell you yesterday, which is very important about blame, both for yourself and for other people. Generally, when we're blaming, and you've probably noticed this, if your level of blame goes up, it comes out of frustration, personal frustration. We're unhappy with ourselves. Sometimes we're seeing our faults in others, we're blaming them. But another thing that happens is blame is a mechanism to relieve pain. It's like a drug to relieve pain. So people who are blaming are in pain. They're feeling themselves, they feel that they're failing. They may be unhappy with themselves because they're failing. And as we said yesterday, they're not able to admit their failure and they need a scapegoat. So they'll find somebody to blame for their failure. Can you relate to this? Yes? Now, what's the problem? The problem is, as long as you're blaming someone for your failure, you can't correct it because it's not in your hands. Right? It's Ishwari's fault that I'm angry. So that means the power to control my anger is actually in her hands. Because if she were nice to me, I wouldn't be angry. But she wasn't nice to me. That's therefore I'm angry. Have you ever been in and had an experience like this? Where you've blamed another person for how you feel? Right? So, very important lesson is nobody can make you feel anything unless you allow them to. And it's very immature to blame someone for how you feel, because they're not responsible for how you feel. You are responsible for how you feel. Yes? And so often we say, you make me angry. It's your fault. Yes? Have you ever said that? This person makes me angry, or this situation makes me angry, and so on. It's not the situation. And how do we know that? Because the person next to you is laughing at what happened, and you're screaming, right? Something stupid happens in India, and this is your first time, and you're screaming, and someone who lives here is laughing. Why are they laughing? Because the first time they came, they were also screaming. And now they realize that this is just how it is, right? And you get entertainment out of it. In fact, I often joke with my wife, said everywhere in India, we should go with a video camera and shoot things that happen, because no one will believe it's not staged. In the beginning of your movie, it says, this is not staged. This all happened. This is real live footage, real time. I know you won't believe it. And you catch all these things that no one outside of India would believe is not staged. Right? So those people who are pushing into you in the temple, those people at the airport who come into the front of the long security line that you've been waiting in for 6 minutes, who upset you, and all the other things that upset you, right? Those people are not the cause of you being upset. It's not their fault. It's your fault. Do you agree? Some of you are thinking, I don't know about that. Nobody can make you feel anything. Right? And so, how do we know this is true? First I said, because the friend next to you is laughing when you're getting upset, because they've learned to laugh, because if they don't laugh, they're going to cry. So, for example, I was teaching this course to a company, a devotee's company, a few weeks ago in Mexico, and we were doing a section on complaining, and I said, and we made a list of everything we complained about in the last year. That took about 4 hours to finish the list. You imagine writing a list of everything you've complained about in the last year? It's very scary. And the reason we do that is so that we realize how much we complain, to realize how much negativity is there in our mind, how often we look at negativity, the negative thing, what's wrong with something. Okay? And I made a suggestion that whenever you're about to complain, you chant this mantra. And it goes like this. That's really interesting. Did you see how that person just banged in and almost knocked me over? That's really interesting. Did you see how that person was driving on the wrong side of the road almost killed us? That's really interesting. You can actually do that. You know, you could actually do that. You could actually avoid complaining with one word, interesting. Did you hear what so-and-so said to me the other day? That's really interesting. Now, normally you might be distraught by what they said. But you realize you have a choice of how you want to respond. Yes? So your friend is laughing. That means his response is different to the exact same event. But what else do we learn? Well, we learn that great devotees like Ambarish Maharaj, Thakur Haridas, Prahlad Maharaj, and others, Lord Jesus Christ, whose life was being attempted, did not get angry. In fact, Lord Jesus prayed for the deliverance of the people who were trying to kill him. Thakur Haridas prayed for the deliverance of the men who were trying to kill him. Why did they do that? A very important point. Why did they do that? Because when you push a sadhu, what do you get out of him when you push him? You get blessings, you get forgiveness, you get kindness, right? Because that's what the sadhu is. Yes? Now, when you push a conditioned soul, what do you get out of them? Like, imagine you're being beaten in every marketplace. What are you thinking? If I live through this, I'm going to kill you. That's what the average person would think, right? If I live through this, I will kill you. And you'll be devising ways to kill them slowly and painfully. At least those thoughts would probably enter our minds. Do you agree? Even the devotee's mind, in the neophyte stage, right? Now, why would those thoughts enter our mind? Because they're in there, in some subtle form. Yes? And that action is bringing them up. Why would they not enter the mind of Thakur Haridas? Because they're not in there, right? So when I say Ishwari makes me angry, Ishwari says to me, Mahatma, no one can make you angry if anger is not within you. It is not I who made you angry. I was just a catalyst for the anger that's in you. And that makes me really angry when she says that. That would be a good play, wouldn't it? Yes?
Sometimes I try to avoid a situation that made me angry
or upset.
So, is that good?
It's okay, but you need to go further. And I can talk a little bit about it, but I just want to make sure we all understand this point. Right now, Ishwari is making me angry. She has power over me. I'm allowing her to control me. Right? Now, here's an important point. Whatever you're feeling, it doesn't mean you have to act on it, just because you're feeling it. And most people don't think like this. They think, if I'm feeling it, I have to act on it. Right? Whatever it is. I feel betrayed. I feel hurt. I'm angry because I was hurt. I feel mortified. Whatever it is I'm feeling, the average person doesn't have this sense of there's a feeling, but how do I want to act? Right? The average person thinks the feeling, after the feeling there's action, and there's nothing, there's no barrier or filter in between the feeling and the action. And once you understand there can be a barrier or a filter, it's quite amazing. For example, emotional maturity means to take control of your feelings. Not that you don't feel it, but to control the actions. Right? You hurt me. I feel hurt. Now, if I take control of my feelings, what will I do? I'll let it go. I'll drop it. I'll still be nice to you. Because as a devotee or as someone who wants to live a sattvic life, I know that's the proper behavior. And I know Krishna and my spiritual master will be pleased if that's the way I act. And because I know that's the way I should act, and I know I have the choice, I can choose how I react, then I choose to act that way. We have to know that we have the choice, and I think many people don't realize they have a choice. It's just, I feel action. Right? Did you feel hungry today? But we're fasting. So what do? You tolerate it. You make that choice. You wanted to say something?
Well, going back a little further now, that was just that you were saying, using the example of Jesus Christ and how when he was being crucified, basically, yeah, that he wasn't angry. But there was another time when he went into the temple angry,
yeah,
and he did act on his anger, but it was perhaps what you call righteous anger,
yeah,
or anger in the
benevolent anger.
Yes.
That would still be the same thing because it's controlled.
Right,
you chose. Yeah, so this is like Prabhupada said, there's nothing wrong with anger if it's used properly, but that's not under the mode of passion. That's the difference. So it's controlled. Many great things happen because people are angry. Martin Luther King was angry, but he directed it to the civil rights movement, and all the people who marched were angry, but it wasn't violent. So it was angry at injustice. So the anger was benevolent. So that's different, yeah. So that's, yes?
Okay. Actually, I would like to make a question about yesterday. If it's possible now or...
Just hold on and then we'll come back. And maybe we'll get to yesterday because we're still reviewing it. So this is an important definition of emotional maturity, is to take control of how you feel. Sometimes you'll have a conversation and then someone will get upset with you and they'll feel disturbed in some way. And then you're thinking, I didn't do anything. I just said this and they took it in the wrong way. And then you're thinking, and now they're upset with you. And then you're thinking, am I in charge of how they feel? Am I responsible for how you... You'll naturally feel that. I'm not responsible for how you feel. I was joking with you and you got upset. You ever been in that situation? And isn't that normally how we feel? So why do you think I'm responsible for how you feel? How you feel is how you feel. But when it happens to us, it's harder to see it. Right? So, take responsibility for how you feel and to know you have the freedom to choose how you feel in any situation. There's two things. Now, we're not talking about choosing how you feel. Now we're talking about taking responsibility for how you feel. I feel angry, I feel resentful, I feel jealous, I feel envious, but I can take responsibility for how I feel. And I'll give you an example. This is really important. So please pay attention. Prabhupada said, let me go back. A lot of times we feel a certain way because we don't understand the context of the situation. Like in India, you don't understand the culture, and it can upset you if you're a Westerner. Because in India, because of the culture, if you're a superior, they'll be very respectful. But even if they don't respect you, they will respect you, because that's the culture. But behind your back, they won't respect you. Right? Now, for a Westerner, especially if you're from New York, it's straight in your face. If I don't respect you, I just tell you. Right? In England, it's probably a little of both, right? A little bit in the middle. In Europe, you get to America, it's very straight in certain parts of the country. And if you're used to that, you think, if someone is not straight with you, you feel they're dishonest, or they're duplicitous. Right? But once you understand the context, then no, that's part of the culture, it's respect. They would never say anything in front of you because you're a superior. Then it doesn't bother you. There's a context. Right? So if you change your context, you can deal with your emotion, right? Adi Devi is upset at Ishwari, but then Ishwari understands the context that something really bad happened yesterday, and now she understands why she's upset with her, and then she's not upset. Right? So you're taking control of your emotions. In our forgiveness workshop, we spend hours taking control of our emotions to try to better understand why a person may have hurt us, what they're going through, to be more compassionate. So as you change context, you get better control of your emotions. Does that make sense? So everything happens within a context. And the more you understand the context, or you change your perception of the context, like Ishwari is changing her perception. She's thinking, why is Adi Devi mad at me? And she's trying to look at it from a more compassionate perspective. Something must be bothering her today. So she doesn't take it personally. So even though she felt a little hurt because they're friends, she didn't retaliate. Say, why did you say that? Don't treat me that way. You need to respect me. She didn't say that. That's how she was feeling, but she didn't react that way. Because she started to think in context. Or she tried to think, how would Prabhupada want me to respond? What is going on in Adi Devi's heart? How can I deal with this in a better way? If you know you can do that, you can get much more emotional control. It's when we don't think we can do that, or if you're sitting here thinking, saying, Prabhu, you don't know how bad of a temper I have. Everything bothers me. I could never do that. To which I would say, you are absolutely right. You could never do that. Because you believe you can never do it. And that just by the end of the situation. So you have to have the understanding that you can. And how do we know we can? Well, one way we know we can is we read Bhagavad Gita and Krishna's telling us to do all these things. Would Krishna tell us to do these things if we couldn't do them? Isn't Krishna telling us to be non-envious, to be kind, to be compassionate, all these, you know? So if we can't do it, why would he tell us to do it? Now this is what Prabhupada said about the context of envy. And this is very interesting. You might feel envy, and envy is a natural emotion for a conditioned soul. And Prabhupada said something amazing. He said, if you envy someone, actually it means you respect them. And you don't realize you respect them. Because you will never envy someone who doesn't have what you want. Do you envy the street sweeper? You walk by the street sweeper every day. Do you ever feel envy for them? You might feel compassion. Oh, it's too bad they have to do that. But you don't feel envy. Do you? The guy who drives up in a Mercedes, you might envy him. Like who goes to the, you know, 10,000 rupee room in the guest house. You might feel envy for him. Why? Because you want that. You actually respect that. Isn't it? Otherwise, why would you envy? You don't envy somebody you don't respect. So Prabhupada said, if you realize the person you're envying, you actually respect, then he said, then you should serve that person. Isn't that interesting? It's a complete shift of an emotional response. Does that make sense? From envy to service, it's a polar opposite, isn't it? So later on, I learned that Patanjali said the same thing. He said, anything that you're thinking which is negative, think the opposite of it. What's the exact opposite? To me, the opposite of anger is compassion. Because anger hurts. And compassion is about understanding and feeling others' pain. So if you're feeling angry, then if you thought, let me be compassionate, that would curb the anger. That's how you can take control of it. Now I heard something from two different teachers that's very, very powerful. and I want to share with you. And it's just it's a side benefit of controlling your emotion. Two different teachers said the same thing in different ways. They said, if you're envious of someone, it's because they have what you want, but if you remain envious, you will never get what you want because it's a you're creating a negative energy around what you want. Well, so one teacher gave the example of money. So someone has a lot of money and you want money, but when you're envious, you just think, oh, this is a bad person because they have a lot of money. Filthy rich or something like that. So you create a negative around the person who has what you want, so then you've created a negative around what you want, and if you create a negative around something, then you don't get it. You block it off. Does that make sense? It's like the person saying, money's not important. Oh, this is bad, he has a lot of money. Or this is bad that he's more successful than me. But you want that success. So both of these teachers said, really what you should do is bless the person. Oh, you have this. I'm so happy that you have this. This is good. And ask them how you can get it. Allow them to be your mentor rather than be envious. How can I achieve this? Right? So you see how these negative emotions, they work against us. And we foolishly think, when we foolishly think we can't control them, then our life ends up exactly the opposite of what we want. Because we want the success, and we want to develop the good qualities of this other devotee, we want to have the achievements of this other devotee. But when we envy them, we're putting a negative on the very things we want. And when we put that negative, then kind of we push ourselves away from it. Rather than being positive about what they have. This is what Prabhupada said the gopis are. They compete with one another to please Krishna. Oh, you've done nicely for Krishna. Let me do better. It's a positive. Oh, you've done this program. It's so nice. I appreciate it. I want to do better than you. Right, so you could say that's transcendental envy. But I appreciate so much what you've done. You've inspired me so much. I want to do better. Right? Let's say you want to write a book, and one of your friends writes a book, and it's very successful, and you go, why her? Why not me? But then you understand from this discussion that I should think, I'm so happy that you're successful. I'm inspired by this. And can you guide me and help me? So then now it becomes a positive form of inspiration. But if you're envious, it becomes a negative. So it's actually preventing you from becoming successful. Isn't that interesting? And when you understand this, you'll never want to be negative about anything. Those of you who took my forgiveness workshop, I think you had the realization, once you let your resentment go, that it was the craziest thing in the world to hold on to it, and now that it's gone, I will never allow another person to hurt me because I don't want to hold on to resentment because it's so negative. It's such a negative force in my life. One writer said, if you actually understood how powerful your thoughts were, you would never have a negative thought. Because negative thoughts create negative situations. They say you become what you think about most. And I was thinking about this morning. And I think for us, it's you become what you pray about most also. What are you praying about? That's what you become. Are you praying to outdo someone because you're envious? Are you praying to get back at someone? Are you telling yourself, I could never control this emotion or that emotion? Is that what you're thinking? Because if you are, it's going to be the way you are. So again, the definition, take responsibility for how you feel. You, according to the level of consciousness we're on, we're going to feel something in situations, right? If you're on a very high level, you won't feel that envy. But if you're on a lower level, you will feel it. So I'm not saying don't feel what you feel. I'm actually saying feel the envy. Wow. You just told me to turn it around, and now you're telling me to feel it. Okay, now this is very important, so please pay attention. This is revolutionary. You will only hear this from revolutionaries, like Mahatma. So this is a revolutionary way of thinking. And next weekend we can do an exercise about this. Why would I say, feel what you're feeling, when I just said take responsibility for how you feel? It's one stage removed. Feel how it feels to be envious. Don't feel the envy and act on it, but feel how it feels to be envious. You understand the difference? Let's say you're envious of me. One devotee came up to me and said, I'm envious of you. I was like, okay, what did I do to you? She said nothing. He said, I want to do workshops like you. So, but let's say you were actually envious. And you just didn't like it that I was doing what I was doing. Then I would say, don't